All right, you guys ready to roll? So it's Angie, and is it Leif? Is that how you say your name?
Yeah, Leif.
Leif. Okay, I'm
Yeah.
country, so it comes out as Leif. I'm just saying,
Well,
Leif.
I've been here for a while, so I answer to anything that starts with an L and ends with an F, you know.
Steve
I got Leif, Life, Leif, you know.
calls you
Yeah, that's close enough.
Nerf. All right, everybody, this is the Georgia Songbirds, and we're here with Leif, and I just got that right, and Angie from the band Crank Up the Silence. Thank you guys for coming on.
Thanks for
Thank you
having
for
us.
having us.
So tell everybody a little about yourself, where you're from, what you do, all that jazz.
Angie, you go ahead.
Okay. I currently live in Houston. We all do. And I grew up in a small town in South Texas. And just have been around music my whole life, have played music my whole life. And, this has definitely been the most fun. It feels like, a climb to something that really pays off and really is fulfilling in all the ways, not just some of them. So, and then Steve, bass player, it's my husband. He doesn't know where he's from. He's a Navy brat, so he's from all over and a lifelong musician, family of musicians as well. Like, if you want to take it and tell about the others.
Yeah, and my name is Leif. My last name's got so many Norwegian characters in there that I don't know if it's fit for, an American podcast. The Norwegian way to say it is Mosvær. I have to simplify it, living here for quite a while, so last name is Mosvær. So originally Norwegian, that's where the accent comes from. I've been here now for the last 8 years. Been playing music my whole life. When I moved over here, I started looking for a band to play with. And since playing back in Norway for 20 years, I needed to find new people to be on this journey with. And that's not easy, I can tell you that much. And you probably know as a musician too, finding people that you're compatible with, that has the same vision of what you're doing and that you actually like spending time with as well. As a band, you spend a lot of time together, so it
Yes.
needs to be a good fit, creatively, when we're making the music, when we're performing and all that. So I was lucky enough to run into and be introduced by some friends to a Scottish guy that lives in Houston, and I was kind of skeptic because I've been trying out a couple of avenues and it wasn't really working well. So I'm like, oh, okay, let me meet this guy. And we sat down and started to ask a couple of, control questions. What kind of guitars do you play? And that, and after a while, I'm like, this guy might know what he's talking about. So, we ended up in jamming, just him and I at his house. And we were just looking at each other and laughing because it was like, okay, he had been hoping to find somebody that would he could form a more long-term kind of relationship and commitment to music, with music, and he hadn't found it. And absolutely brilliant guitar player. So that is Ewan MacKay. He is an important part of the Crank Up the Silence picture. And then we were short a drummer, so I reached out to some of my musician friends over here, and they said, you got to talk to this guy, Juhandi Urena. And he's from the Dominican Republic. He's been here now for quite a while. He's an absolute fantastic drummer. Met up with Juhandi, an absolute monster on the drums. And I played with a lot of good drummers in my time. And this guy is just out of this world. And I think it's the combination of, we're quite a lot of nationalities here. I'm Norwegian and Ewan is from Scotland. Johannes from Dominican Republic. Angie is from local Texas girl, and Steve has been everywhere. He's lived in many parts of the world. So we bring a lot of that to the table when we're starting working with music as well. So it is a different approach. You can hear in some of the metal, fills that Juhandi is pulling from his metal background, even though we don't play metal, but you got that, and then you got the Caribbean kind of part coming through every now and then. So it's a very intricate mix of influences that kind of makes up the band.
See, and I think that's so cool when you have a band that does that. I've always made jokes about my band being mutt music because we're such a mixture of everything. We're not that kind of mixture. I mean, we're all from Georgia, but still we have like R&B and blues. And I was listening to some of your guys' stuff and I was reading some of the information about you guys. So you guys, between everybody, you speak like four different languages, right?
Yeah, it's funny because we joke around a lot because we say that we speak Canadian, Scottish, Irish, and so we get to quite a few languages. Plus, we do have quite a few more, with Spanish and Norwegian. I understand and speaks Danish and Swedish as well, and then German. And I don't know if we ever did the full round, Angie, of which languages we actually can touch, but there's quite a few.
Yeah, my wife is originally from Germany, so she was an army brat. So she's been all over. She's lived in New York and Texas and Georgia now. So I kind of get the blend where you don't hear it all. But I mean, to me, when all those different styles and those that blend, do you guys ever put like different like nationalities in your songs? Like, do you come out and start speaking Norwegian in a song and mix it in, or Spanish or anything like that?
What? I would say something about that. We haven't done any foreign language things, but Steve and I've always been impressed with, so impressed with Leif's lyrics. And we started kind of paying attention to what he does. And I think one of the things that's interesting is there's sayings in other languages that we don't have, right? So when you translate that to English, you get something that's novel for us because we don't have a way to say that. And I don't know if that's exactly what's happening, but I know like we look at metaphors from the same, however many hundreds of metaphors we've experienced as Americans. I think when you get that worldview and you get comparisons and metaphors and analogies from other places that are just like, oh, we've never said it like that, but that is a great way to say that. That's, very profound. So I know that's worked into the lyrics a lot, and I'm a lyrics girl, so that's fun to be a part of.
I was going to
Yeah, and
ask
I think I've seen that quite a few times, Angie, when I've been working with other languages as well, that when they say some of their sayings, it's all of a sudden this is really refreshing and new. So I worked with a guy from Argentina quite a lot, and he always had, well, like we say, back home, and there was some kind of saying, and it was like, that's such a refreshing kind of way of looking at things, because you're right, we have only a finite amount of ways of saying things that we're used to, and this is kind of like, and then when somebody says it slightly different ways, like that's kind of cool, that is refreshing, so. Absolutely, I like that.
See, my way would be the redneck ways. That would be my saying. See,
Yeah, that's me. That's
that's the
I've got
true
all
way.
those.
That's the true way.
Now, how many does everybody write when you're banned?
So the way that we've done our writing has been basically we have our writing, and then we have a face that comes after the skeleton of the song that is highly collaborative and highly creative that we all contribute to. So I would normally do the writing of the lyrics and the music. And I would say it has maybe, depending on how finished the song would be, probably some place around maybe 60, 70, sometimes 80% of the song is ready. And then we go to our rehearsal studio, we start working on the song, and it's extremely collaborative, very intuition based. And the ideas are coming from everyone. So it's like, let's try this, let's see how that worked. What if we did this? And it's like very, and we have absolutely no kind of ego when it comes to which solution we choose to go with, and which is
Try
very
anything.
refreshing. Yeah, we'll try everything and say, how do we feel about this? Does this work better than that? So, which is a very comfortable way of working because the best ideas always wins. And even with two guitar players in the band, which is kind of like a recipe for disaster, that's normally two big egos that doesn't work well. So, but we've found a way of working that is, very enjoyable. I think we have our best moments, Angie, when we're kind of like, We get to rehearsal room, we start working on a song, we try something new, and all of a sudden, new door just opens up.
Oh, it's
And
exhilarating.
it
It's
is.
exhilarating. And even like a lot of times we'll have a song. We had a song that Leif wrote early on in our band's timeline, and we liked it. And we played it a few times, but it just didn't feel like it was ready to push into a studio to record. And so we had another one. We've had a few of those sessions with that song where we gotta tweak some things, and just the things, the creativity is contagious, it seems, and it's just the most exciting rehearsals we have to me is when we're it's a little stress, but I think that's what gives you the adrenaline, right? Is
Yeah.
the kind of the pressure. And it's like anything else you do. I know in my day job it's this way too. When you work with such talented people, it puts a different kind of pressure on, a good way. Really, as you're also doing your best, you know, you're it pushes you further, and some of the things that we've done or that just like whoa, like I would have never thought of that on my own. Just being in this room with this group of people, that's it's just inspiring.
Now,
And then what comes after that, just kind of like to cover that part as well. So we have the full circle of how we kind of make our music. We then try the songs out live because I think we're mostly driven by playing live. We love the stage, we love the crowd, we love that interaction between the music and our audience. And we kind of can gauge, you can really easily feel which songs are the ones that are driving the show and which one seems to be, they're okay, but they're not really kind of like they're not unicorns, you know. And
And if you
they're
can't feel it, somebody will tell you afterwards.
yeah,
Some random
absolutely.
stranger will tell you this one was the best. Keep doing that one.
Yeah.
I don't know
And
about
then
that one.
so when we then complete our kind of like we think that the song is pretty ready, we go to our studio and we always record. So that is something that we never stop doing. So we always have one song that we're working on in the studio. We don't do a full album. We always do one by one. Our producer will then go, we do the pre-recording, and then we'll sit down and again approach the whole song one more time creatively without having to be there in front of your amp or, you know, and actually be playing at the same time. And we critically go through every piece. And we do quite a few alterations then as well before it becomes the song that finally gets released.
See, I like that part of it because, like I said, as the majority of the songwriter here, I like when you mentioned I like when the guys get involved because now it's different inputs, it's different ideas, and I've said this before on a podcast is as a songwriter, you should have a you should be open to ideas. Now, will they always work? No, you guys know that you hit stuff, it works, it doesn't work, you move on. But the fact that when the guys get involved and we it usually happens every practice. We'll sit down and play like toward the end after we've done our sets and got our stuff ready. Then we'll just mess around and somebody start a beat and somebody's coming with some guitar because I'll do like rhythm and stuff. I won't do lead and then I'll sing and I'll write more of the words. I like the like Angie, I'm a lyricist. I love the lyrics of a song. And some of the best songs actually come out of there. Now I will say this. Patrick is my drummer. He plays cajon too. He's the one that is more catching on to the bug, to the songwriting bug, because it is contagious. It's something that if you once you if you've been in a band, I know singer songwriters that play solo, it's different. A band is just it's just different. It's there's a camaraderie that you have, and especially when you hit it right, it just feels so good. But
Does.
he came in like Jesse, I have an idea for a song. All right, Patrick, what do you got? He goes, all right, there's this couple, and they're poor, and there's a dirt house or a dirt road, and that's all I had. I'm like, okay, give me a minute on this one, Patrick. I'll figure it out. And I tell you what, we came up with a song called "Dirt on My Yellow Brick Road," and it was it's coming on the album, and it's such a good song. And like you said, the process that you guys do, we're in that process of trying to figure out how can we make it sound right because you guys know there's certain songs that you write that it's the core of it. You know it's good. You know it's good. You know when it's bad and you know when it's good, but you know when it's good. And then you just got to figure out the little intricate parts where you want to put the what's the rhythm, what's the tempo. You got to figure that stuff out.
For sure. And I think, you know, We've been trying to since position for quite a while. We've been trying to figure out how do we keep listeners interested in wanting to hear the rest of the song. You know, one thing is to say, okay, here's the song, and there it is. But as a listener, and I have the same kind of thing, what is it that drives my interest to actually want to hear the rest of this song and even want to hear it again? So you will find in our music that we're approaching a lot of the songs from a more orchestral way of looking at music. I know, you know, we're constructed with chords, with a bass line, with drums, some keyboard chords. That's the building blocks we have. But we've been trying to see, can we do something different? There is still some elements in the music that is small little nuggets to listen for that kind of makes you, hey, wait a second, I thought I had this figured out, but there seems to be something else going on here as well. And trying to kind of, because the music is so saturated and there are so many songs out there, why would somebody continue to listen to our songs? So that's kind of how we have approached the music. Yeah, that's basically how we enjoy listening to music as well. If there is something, so there will be some resistance in there. It won't be just straightforward all the time, but there will be a little bit of different ways of doing things that hopefully, you know, will catch our audience's attention and make them want to re-listen and listen again.
And I think like you don't a lot of bands, and you know, this isn't trying to throw anybody under the bus, but a lot of bands, you know, a song is a story. I'm a actor, so you're trying to get to that climax of the story, and a lot of bands just do that by playing louder, right? You can do that with your lyrics, but I think power of music, even more than storytelling or writing, is there's you can create a feel with the sounds from the instruments that aren't just through your ear in the words you're hearing, but also like this welling up in your soul, you know, when you get to that point. And I think that's what we're paying attention to now is, you know, how to get that just your full body chills, you know, full body experience, and not just playing louder or not just having a bridge here to break it up, you know.
And we've been looking at the songs as, you know, they're 50% ours, and not more than that, because we want a listener to be able to put their own stories, their own feelings, their own kind of connect with the songs that speaks to them, so that they can put in, yeah, their part of what this means. And I think that's an important piece, you know, because that's how I listen to music too. When I listen to a song that really speaks to me, it becomes mine in a way. I project my own experiences, my own feelings, my own thoughts into that song, and it becomes mine. Yeah, so we've been kind of like cognizant of the fact that if we leave them open enough to connect to, then that could happen. And when we do get that feedback, and we do, then that's a great thing. I think that's how we want music to be. It needs to be not just, oh, listen to us, how great music we can make, you know, but more like, hey, this actually meant something to me. I feel that this is partially mine, and I understand where you guys are coming from. That's kind of like the most rewarding moments for me.
Yeah, I like that. I found recently I started doing this more. Is there's more, because you mentioned, Angie, about the bands getting louder. I'm like, I kind of take the opposite approach of it. It's like, let's be silent. Let's give that song a second to breathe and let them catch up and hear, like, oh, okay, you know, and then go into something different. I mean, there's different ways to do it. There's not a right or a wrong way. Playing louder is kind of a rock thing to do, but. But let's hear one of your guys' song. Which one you want to hear first? Which one you guys want to share with everyone?
Well, I think, you know, our first song that came out was Can't Take That Away. And I think it's a good representation of the band. I don't know how you feel, Angie, but I think that is one of the songs that kind of shows what we are about, and then we can go into different extremes afterwards.
I feel like that's our good baseline.
Yeah.
Is there a story, like, because I'm a songwriter, I like your stories. Is there a story related to the song or about the song that you want to share with everyone?
Yeah, I think when I wrote Crank, Can't Take That Away, it was kind of, there are certain parts in human relationships that you control, right? And there are certain things that you can't. So there is the idea behind Can't Take That Away is to kind of say, even though this didn't work out the way that we wanted it to work out, or this relationship isn't what we hoped it should be, you can still not take away that I love you. So, which is a very kind of empowering, whether you're the leaving part or the hurt part, that is being left behind, or it doesn't really matter. It's very empowering to be able to say, you can't take that away. I control that.
That is deep. If that is a very deep statement, my music is not deep. Mine is outlaw country stuff. But I'm gonna mute us and I'm gonna play Can't Take That Away. So you guys just give me a thumbs up when you hear.
All I hear is silence. It's getting different and loud. No day goes by without it. Following me like a cloud. You may say I deserved you. Feel the way that you used to. And if two wrongs make a right, then this is a fair fight. I thought I did what. But it wasn't enough. Now it's hard to admit that I was so unfit. You can't take that. You can't take that away from me. You can't take that away from me. silence. It's getting different and loud.
There is so much to like about that song. There's the melodics. There's so many melodic instrumentations in there. Starts with the keys. That's the first thing I heard. And then you after the solo bridge part, you did it with a guitar. And the melodic solo is so good. That's a really, you gotta get, Leif, you got a really, really good voice.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Sure. It is. And the funny thing is that you could even see it in the answers that Andy and I gave when we started the recording or we started this meeting. You said, welcome to the show. And we both say at the same time, thank you for having us. You know, the background vocals are done by Angie. I do the vocals, and we're so in sync. We're so used to kind of like doing this. It's almost automatic. You know, Can't Take That Away has an interesting structure as well, because it starts off with a pre-part. All you hear is silence. It's getting deafening loud. Mm-hmm. It comes back as the bridge, but then it's kind of like full on, you know, instrumentation, rock song.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes back at the end again. Even though the song has a verse and a chorus, there is a part that comes in three times. And you don't really notice because it's so different. You notice the beginning and the end, but you don't notice that the bridge is actually the same one octave higher. Yep. So it's, so it doesn't follow the linear structure of how most songs are constructed, but it still works. So it's kind of cool.
I never do that. And guys, I write notes down. Harmonies was one of them. So Angie, you did a really good job of harmonies on there.
Thank you.
I don't follow structure. I know there's a structure that people want to follow, but you know, in rock and roll, which is what that reminded me of the 80s ballads, you know, like Scorpions. And it kind of reminded me of a little bit of Disturbed when they did Sound of Silence, when they took that song and did Sound of Silence, because your voice, it's got a certain timbre. It's not as deep as his, but it's got that kind of that power. You can just feel. And you guys, we talked about it before, about I like to put the silence part. You let the song breathe. You guys did that. And I like that song.
Thank you. Well, we love it too. And, you know, it's almost like, which is kind of like, it sounds like we're in love with our own work, that we kind of love. I love the way it makes me feel when I play this song, because it's an emotional song. It has a lot of kind of, and it's funny, this is our oldest song. And even when we play it live, it's almost like when we get to that song, it's like, we love playing it. It's just such a great moment in the show as well. And it has this impact too, where it's kind of like, it's almost like, where do you go from there? What do you say after that? You know, because it's such an kind of emotionally driven topic and song. So, but I love that when we're kind of getting to a point where the room is kind of like, we don't know what to do right now. You know, because there's some magic in there that is like, I know. So we did something to you, and we were a part of it. And you felt some of what we felt, you know.
See, now that's one of the things that I've said this before, and I really believe it. I think that every songwriter has at least one hit in them. I really do. I think they have it. Mm-hmm. Now they have multiple. Some have multiple, obviously, but I think everybody does. And I think what you hit on is like you knew it. We said it earlier. You knew to the core. That's a good song. Mm-hmm. Now what do I do? I made a good song. How do I top that? Can I top that? And should I top that?
Well, one of the musicians that I remember seeing before the band started that I thought was so interesting, and I've always thought of this, and every time we play a live show and we come up with a set list or we come up with the order of things, he was a, I don't know, very eclectic writer. And he had actually gone to seminary and studied congregation response. And he was a monk for a while, and he did all these things, but he had this power from the stage of getting the audience involved, getting the audience to want to be close up to the front, to getting the audience to feel like the person next to you is your best friend, even if you've never met them before, you know, this connection. And it was, his shows were always very electric because he had the audience in mind, always had the audience in mind. And I think, you know, when you play a live show, the there's a temptation sometimes to play, you know, all your favorite songs or to do a certain type of set list. But I think when you come into it with this feeling of, you know, what kind of ride do we want to take them on? And where are they going to want to feel this emotional connection? And where do they just want to have fun? Where do they want to feel inspired? Where do they want to feel driven into the ground? You know, and so I think that, you know, that careful placement of songs and the impact that they have is sometimes forgotten. We're trying hard not to forget that.
Now, where do you guys record at?
So we record at Sassafras Studios,
okay,
in Houston. So our producer is John Edward Ross, very talented producer, I recommend him. Anyone that wants to record in the Houston area or wants to fly in, he's a fantastic producer. So the creative part, the interaction with, I feel that John is to crank up the silence what the Beatles producer was to the Beatles. You know, they called him the fifth Beatle. I think it was Brian something, if I'm not mistaken. But he's a very kind of, he taps into the creativity that is already there. And he pulls out more, and absolute whiz when it comes to trying out new ideas and see what works. And I can't speak highly enough of him. And then when we go back and we've done the song in the studio, we go back and start playing it live again. Like, wow, okay. there's now it has become what it was supposed to become. It was great when we came in, but now it is absolutely, you know, transformed into what we hoped it could possibly be, you know.
Are you guys getting to play your originals out when you go play?
Yes. So that's all we do.
Thank you.
So we would occasionally, so we do a couple of fun things though, because we like to in a show, we play anything from, if it's in a lineup, it could be anything from 35 to 45 minutes. If it's our own show, we'll play for an hour and a half or something like that. We've taken some of our songs and transitioned into a cover for a short period of time, just to kind of get the audience to kind of like, what is that? What is going on here? We have a song called Amygdala that is also out on Spotify, and we pair that with another Brick in the Wall from Pink Floyd, and then we only do one verse from another Brick in the Wall, and then we go back into our own song again, and then adds that song, and we play the whole song. So everybody's like, what happened? I know that. So they're kind of like trying to figure out, hey, wait a second. And then when we get to the end of the song, we stop the song and we play another Brick in the Wall and the solo, and then kind of like, all right, yeah, you guessed it right, this is what we did. So we have a couple of those nuggets in there that we just do, also because there is I think people like to, if this is their first Crank Up the Silence show, people kind of want to hear something they've heard before. It's kind of like, oh, okay, this gives me the avenue to understand who you guys are. So, and some of our influences would be, you know, the Police, Pink Floyd for sure. Muse is another one that comes up on some of our more rock-based songs. So we don't mind kind of teasing, saying, hey, yeah, you're right. You know, there is influence coming from those angles.
See, people that have heard the show know how I feel about covers. I've never been a fan of covers just because I'm a songwriter. I could never do it justice, right? This mm-hmm. original. So if I'm going to take a cover, I'm going to change it around. And we just learned another Brick in the Wall. We just started doing our own version, practicing. We mm-hmm. did like one. 2 weeks ago we tried it because we have mm-hmm. Keith now. So I was like, okay, well, if we're gonna do it, let's make it really dark. I mean, it's already kind of a dark song anyway. Let's make it dark mm-hmm. and like gritty and just
go
to town. So I like hearing stuff like that, and I like the fact that you do your originals. I know it's hard for bands to, here in Georgia, it's hard for bands if they're not a cover band to get gigs. Yeah. It's like that in Texas.
Let's talk, I think that's something to kind of like try to understand where your music fits in, because we've been playing for a long time. We've been playing cover bands. We've done all kinds of gigs, and it's a very different way of coming together around music. So, because if you play a bar and it's a live stage, they want a band there. People come there to eat and drink, then
Yes.
they want to hear stuff they know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to just show up and say, hey, we're just going to play a lot of music you never heard before. So we our favorite stages have become more of the, if it's a pure music stage environment, it's don't serve food. You're not there to eat crawfish and chicken wings while we're playing. You're there to listen to music, and those are the venues that we enjoy the most. Sometimes it's a blend, but every now and then, back in the days when we played a lot of covers, I'm like, it was almost like, hey, sorry for being here and making so much noise while you guys are eating.
Right.
It was kind of like, are we bothering you guys with our music? And but that's kind of like, it's just two different environments. If it's for entertainment purely while people are doing something else, and if it's partying too, if people go out to party, they want to dance. They want to hear songs they can sing along with. So it's kind of like trying to find the right fit as well. Just because it's a music stage doesn't mean that it's fit for what you want to do with your original music. So it's a long way to go. You've got to build your audience. You have to find the right places to play. And that's tough in the beginning, because in the beginning you just need to get out and play. That's the only recipe for that stuff. In the beginning, start with some open mics, go to some band open mics so you can start getting traction and getting used to playing. And then you just have to play a lot of shows. And after a while, you see these are stages that we enjoy playing and it's a good fit for us. And then these are ones that we could probably play, but we're not coming off stage happy. It's kind of like
A couple of
people.
years ago, we got asked to play Houston Livestock Show, a huge event, and I don't know how many people, but more people than we've ever played for before. And it was a great opportunity, and we got paid a lot of money, but we knew we needed to do, I don't know, we probably did 80% covers, and got some great feedback and a great paycheck at the end of the night. And we all met back up the next week at the rehearsal room and said, let's never do that again. It just
And so,
didn't fit into
because
it.
you're being skewed towards the lowest common denominator, and there is no way you can fight that. If it isn't the right venue you're playing at, you're going to always end up in that situation that you have to go to your go-tos in order to get the job done. And
Well,
that's why it's so
get
rewarding.
overshadowed too. Then
They
that's
do, they do.
you want people to hear a few of your songs and know, like, okay, we can do justice to these covers, and here's one of our own songs, so maybe you'll give it some appreciation. But in those kinds of scenarios, I think your own music gets overshadowed, as opposed to doing 10 of your own songs and two covers. And for an audience that came to listen to your music.
So the dream show for us, I think, would be either, well, this weekend we're playing and we're headlining at the Continental Club in Houston. We're pairing up with one other artist. Those are the shows that we really enjoy. We market it. People know what they're going to get when they get there. We pair up with one or two other bands, and they bring their people, we bring ours, and it's just a great night. And but the premises of going out and listening to the music is exactly that. They're coming to listen to music, and we're building a fan base that is there not just to hear anything. They're actually coming there to hear us play, and that's very, very rewarding. So other avenues for that would be festivals where we will be exposed to another audience that might not know us but could be surprised and enjoy what they hear and want to kind of come and hear the band again. That's kind of like the stages that we enjoy playing.
Yeah, do you guys get out of Texas at all?
Yeah, once.
Yeah, a little. We've been a little bit around, but Texas is big.
Yeah.
So it's
That's true.
yeah, we do have plans though. We're kind of tinkering with the idea of doing a European run next year, next summer, and hit a couple of countries in Europe. And yeah, because the music is just distributed all over the world. And the problem is, it doesn't help that you have a couple of hundred people in Germany, and you have 1,000 people in Czechia, and then you have a couple of people, 500 in Britain. It's really hard because you can't ask them all to, can you just get to the same place? That would be
Right.
great. Because then we can have a really good show. So that kind of it's a blessing and a curse to be able to distribute worldwide, but probably have to limit locations just because it's just so dispersed. And when we look at our stats at Spotify and all that, it's cool that our music is being played in 52 countries. It's really, really fantastically cool. It's very spread out, but part of what we're doing as well, and why I find it so rewarding, is that recording has that impact that our music can be played in Brazil thousands of times, and it's being enjoyed. We're not a part of that part of the enjoyment, but we do get the enjoyment of knowing that somebody right now that we don't know is sitting down and listening to our songs, and they've done it over and over again. And that is very rewarding. In addition to the live, of course, the live shows are instant gratification. We get the response and we love what's going on in that room. But also knowing that it's working when we're not playing is very intriguing as well.
Well, let's listen to another one of your guys' songs. Which one do you guys want to share next?
What do you think, Angie? Where should we go next?
You want to go hard?
Yeah, why not?
Go hard. Stand up tall.
Yeah, stand up. Yeah, let's do stand up tall. Why not?
Right. And what's a good story for this song?
So, stand up tall is basically based off of the idea that in order to meet challenges in your life, there is only one way to do it. It isn't that things gets easier. It's just that you get braver, and that's the way to look at when things are tough. It's not nothing is going to come and fix it all for you. So, but there is some profound truth in that. As you take responsibility, you're willing to stand up for what you believe in, and you face your challenges head on. Something happens. It's very empowering. You get out of a victim role and understand that, listen, I can do this. I can look difficult things in the eye, and it's super scary at first, but it can be mastered. And it's the only way. Any research will show that when it comes to problems with anxiety, problems with dealing with tough things in life, there is only one way forward, and that is, to stand up and be brave. And I think that sometimes it's been lost in the way that we think, where everything has become so diluted. Everything needs to be kind of fixed by someone else. I think it's very empowering to say that you can stand up and you can straighten up your back and you can face your challenges head on. Even though it's tough, it doesn't mean that you don't have to be scared, but it means that when you do that over and over again, something happens with you. You become braver, and that is a good place to be. So that's stand up tall for you.
Caught in a lie.
Man, the bass riff and the guitar playing in that is out of this world. And guys, this is when I wish we had video, because if you guys can't see what we're doing, we're all just banging to it. We're just, it reminded me of something, and for the life of me, I can't think of the name of it now. It was an 80s band. It was a movie, and the whole style and your voice left, it just reminded me of that. Oh, I can't think of it. I wish I could. You remind me of the guy from, I don't know if you guys ever seen Weird Science, the movie in the 80s. Mm-hmm. The biker guy. You remind me of the biker guy from Weird Science. Maybe that's why I'm thinking of a Weird Science movie.
Yeah, you know, I had a funny experience with this song. I got to say, you know, this is, I don't know what it says about me, but it says something. But we went to support one of our friend's daughter the other day. She was starting to play the drums, and we went to one of the rock clubs, and they were playing like a showcase gig there for all the students. Mm-hmm. And in between the bands, they would put music on, and, you know, she played her song, and then all of a sudden, the song comes on, and I'm like, oh, that's a cool song. That's Muse. I said, hey, I've played this song. And then one of our friends look at me and is like, dude, that's your song. I didn't recognize my own song. I thought it was a Muse song. So somebody saw me in the crowd, and so the sound guy put it on because he knew that I was there. So that's, it was cool. Funny. But that's kind of like you hear something familiar and you think, hey, wait a second, I'm connected to this in some way. Wait a second, I wrote this song and I didn't recognize it.
And see, that's people, if you don't realize, that's why we forget our own song sometimes. I don't care who you are, we always forget our
song. Yeah, that's how it is. And this one here is kind of like the gratification we get from playing this, you know, guitar players and you know, we get to riff off on this one and really, really enjoy it. And Andy's arpeggiated keyboards there is kind of like, it's just such an enjoyable song to play. And it's like a war cry, you know, it's like this empowering stand up and, you know, fight song, but it's a good kind of fight song. The funny thing is that if I look at the representation that we're getting on this song on Spotify, we're getting added to a lot of workout routines, which is kind of funny because it's like, it's got that energy to it, you know, go a little further. Two more push-ups, you know, and go the extra mile. So, which was the intent of the song as well, to kind of stimulate, you know, that bravery and say, listen, you can do this. You can, you know, just, yeah.
It definitely did, because I'm sitting there and I'm rocking out to it. And I know, and this is some people that are listening to songwriters. I know when you're with a band, it's easier to, well, it's not easy, but you can do that stuff and you can feel it when it's like, we did a song that's so fast that it's like 222 beats a minute. It's the fastest song I ever did, but it moves. As a songwriter, like if you're a singer songwriter, you know, mics, or you're playing solo, I know it's harder to do that because so you're in a guitar, you don't have the drums, you don't have the bass, you don't have a whole lot of stuff to do it with. But that being said, songwriters have a tendency to make sad songs. And unless you're at a listening room, and I've said this before, I love sad songs, but I'm a songwriter. I think songwriters appreciate sad songs more than the average person. You kind of mentioned it earlier, they want to dance, they want to work out, they want to move. And if you think about it, when you listen to a song, the first thing you hear is the music. That's the first thing you hear. It's the production of it. It's got to have a production. And then you hear the voice. You've got to get a voice. Leif, you got a great voice. And then maybe they'll listen to the words in this story. But it's the I remember now. You know, the bass. And the guitar.
Yeah.
That was cool. And you get all those changes in it. So that's cool.
Yeah, we change tempo too in there. Which is, and we go from 4-4 to 6-8. So it's kind of like, and we're doing it seamlessly, so you don't really know that it's happening, because it's the transition is very kind of very smooth. So that's another piece of you know, enjoying doing something different that breaks it up, you know, and makes it different. So
see, and people that know me, 3-4 is my enemy. I hate 3-4. I love to write to it, but it throws me off, because when I was learning to write, I didn't pay attention to the timing, right? I just wrote the song, and then when I got a drummer, I would figure it out. Well, now to what you just said, going into 6/8, you didn't know it. I couldn't tell unless I sit there and counted, but I'm horrible with time. I'm not going to count. I want to play. I hear it. I feel it. I want it to come. And actually, when you did that change, I could hear something different. And I'm like, that's different, but it still fits. And it doesn't, it's so minute that you can't really notice it unless you're a musician that just like studies and like, oh, wait a minute, they went to six. Forget counting. Enjoy the music,
Great.
people.
Yeah, and that's I think if you look at, and we've been enjoying the comparison, first of all, and the inspiration of The Police, for instance. And if you look at some of the songs that Sting wrote early in his career, there is some very weird time signatures in there, but you don't notice because it's w so well done. It just feels like a song. And anyone that doesn't know the kind of theory behind songwriting would not even bother to try to figure out what it is. They just like the way it feels and the way it sounds. So yeah, that's and this is kind of like, you're right, as songwriters, we do have this inclination to write slow songs because and the, I saw that from my songwriting too. I'm like, I need to change this because my our night playing these songs are going to be pretty dull if we don't put some upbeat stuff in there. So I engineered this, and this is what I've done quite a few times. I would listen to a song anywhere. I remember crossing the street and hearing a car pulling up, and there was a song there with a tempo that I liked. So I pull up my phone, I tap in the metronome tempo, and I go back home and I say, we need a song at 142 beats. So and then when I start writing, I force myself to say, this is the tempo. You can do anything, but this is the tempo. So forcing myself to get out of always ending up at very comfortable guitar chords and keys as well. You have to force yourself your go-to keys, or everything will be in the key of G, or in key of C or whatever your go-to would be. So and that's what happens when you do that, is that your songs will sound different. And from a songwriting perspective, if you listen to and you're like, I heard the first song, the other 10 was the exact same. No point in listening to the rest of them. And how do you break out of that? Well, there is ways of using those tools and say, first of all, pay attention to tempo, force yourself to write in tempo you haven't written in before. Find a different key that you haven't been playing before. Use a different instrument. I wrote then our next song coming out that we're working on right now is going to be very different again from what we just listened to. And I wrote that on the bass. I just sat down and said, this is a song that will be written on a bass, which changes your mind because all of a sudden you don't have all these kind of regular patterns you fall into because you're a guitar player. All of a sudden you have, one root and that's where you're coming from. And then, it turns out different.
See, I found that out too. I wrote there was a song, like I'm not very good at keys. Like Angie, I can't play keys. I know you're a keyboardist and you're really good. Me, I can play in the key of C as long as I only have to do four chords. But I sat down one time on a bass, like you said, Leif, and I was like, it made me playing a bass made me actually think of the it actually helped want to help me with time because I'm thinking, I'm playing and I'm hitting the root. And then it is different. Like I couldn't write, I wrote one song on a piano. I couldn't write a lot. Like I said, and it was in the key of C. So I didn't have to worry about doing anything different.
You used it up. You used it up.
Right. So, but that's cool. I'm glad you said that because there is certain tricks and trades that there is that people maybe they don't know, and the bass and keys and I like that.
Yeah. And from a songwriting perspective, and I think, since it's a songwriting podcast, I think it's worth kind of like touching on how do you come up with an idea for a song? And I think that's an interesting kind of concept because you're going from nothing to something, right? And that is a huge leap. And I was a musician for about, 20, 15, 20 years before I tapped into what writing a song could be. I tried it every now and then, and it really didn't work out for me at all. So, and I started kind of getting into to songwriters like John Mayer, and people that really could write good songs. Whether you like them or not doesn't really matter. But if you look at his writing and you listen to the ideas behind how he approaches writing, it was really, really cool. And I listened to one of his teachers that was teaching poetry at Berkeley University when John Mayer was there. And kind of picked up, okay, what if you approach this from a completely different angle? And so my method kind of started gearing around, I need one unique idea to build a song around. What is this song about? What is that one thing that I want to say? And based off of that, you can then build around that and kind of like, okay, if this is what I'm trying to say, first of all, you got to ask yourself, has it been said so many times before that it's really not worth saying it one more time? Or if it is an exhausted, topic, do I have an angle or a metaphor that makes it new, that looks at it in a different way? So that's kind of like how a lot of our songs have kind of started. There's this one idea that I think is good enough to keep building around, and then kind of more ideas seems to be kind of like bolting onto that, and it very often it takes on a life of its own, because once you start with that one idea, it then builds further on. And I think one song that we probably, if we do have time for another one,
Yeah,
maybe we should listen
absolutely.
to Hold On. That
Okay.
is, a song that is, again, very different from what we've done before. And I've wrote this, I started writing this pre-pandemic. And then when the pandemic hit, it was kind of like, this is the song. This is the song we need to hear right now. And the main idea for Hold On, before we kind of listen to it, was that it seems like happiness doesn't accumulate on top of the wealth pyramid. It seems like hard times are hitting us equally hard, but in different ways. So it puzzled me that it seems like life being tough for the people on top of the food chain, big movie stars, the ones that really made it, suicide rate high, drug abuse high, people just not being happy, and it seems like it's distributed pretty evenly. And that kind of puzzled me to say, oh, okay, so we're all having those moments in our lives where we don't see how to get out of this, how to get through this. And sometimes the only recipe you have is time. That's the only medicine you can kind of pour in there and say, just hold on. At some point, it's going to get better. And that's where that song kind of came out, and we recorded it, and got it out. And I really enjoy a lot of the lyrics of this one, because it's talking to something that we all, in certain periods of our life, will have experienced.
I remember I had a student once from France, and we were talking about, I was asking her, like, one of the differences you see in American culture, and she, I'm not going to attempt a French accent, I'm from Texas, but she's, I would love to. In my mind, I do a great French accent. I've tried it hasn't come out quite right. But she said, you Americans, you think happiness is a place you're going to get? You're gonna climb this mountain, you're gonna get to happiness, and then you're just gonna fight to hold on to it. She said it in France, like, it's one of a million emotions, and it'll come back around. It just, they all kind of do, and they come back around. But it's not this thing to attain and like stay with and try to protect at all costs. And so you just you kind of ride through the emotions and the time that you're in. And the song, it came out during COVID, right? Or right as things were kind of starting to get back a little normal, but we definitely started recording it during COVID, and that was one of things I think was timely about the song.
I can see the sunlight shining, I can see the moonlight hiding. I can see the sunlight aging in your eyes. Underneath the happy glide. There is the dark subsiding. I can see the sunlight fighting to keep things good. But it fades away, turns into gray. It's not gonna be all good, even if you think it should. With the ups and downs, from shame to crown, from the poorest neighborhood to the top of Hollywood. Just keep holding on. Just keep holding on. I can see the sunlight shining. I can see the moonlight hiding. I can see the sunlight aging in your eyes. Underneath the happy gliding, there is a dark subsiding. I can see the sunlight fighting to keep things good. Laughter and pain could use an in vain. In minus and in plus, it's the same for all of us. You think it's all sweet till the first heart hits, then it crumbles all apart and you're thrown back to the start. Just keep holding on. You gotta just keep holding on. Just keep holding on. You gotta just keep holding on. Start to mend. You can't escape without some scars. It is part of who we are, and it's gotten us this far. Just keep holding on.
What I like about your guys' music is it's hard to pinpoint because there's so many styles into it. Like that, for whatever reason, that song, the visual that it gave me, because it starts off like a 70s Rocky theme with the bass and the piano, the keys. And I'm sitting there, and the more as I listen to it, I don't know if you guys have videos or not for it, but this is what I saw in my head. Is it's like a timeline of history. So it starts, because I thought of Rocky would like start in the '70s and it would show all these, these events unfolding and people's lives and all the horrible things, and start showing some of the good things in life. And it's like a visual. I just see like a visual kaleidoscope of history as it goes through the whole song.
I think that's a beautiful way of looking at it.
And my favorite line from that song is your wounds will recommend it, and it's something about scars, and then it's a part of who we are. The scars are a part of who we are, and it's gotten us this far. And that fits exactly with what you're, you know, imagining there. That's
I think so too. And I think, Angie, what you mentioned before we played the song as well, I think the expectations of life being easy and good all the time is, and the disappointment when it's not, is such a, you know, I wish somebody told me early on that, hey, it's going to be a mix, so that you're prepared and you know that, hey, it's good when it's good and sometimes it's not. That's just how it is, because you don't control all the elements of what your life is going to turn out to be. And I think, you know, it's a very healthy way of looking at, in this day and age, you know, where everything is portrayed through social media to be absolutely stunning and great, you know, I think it's healthy to say, listen, it's a mix. And that is for all of us. There's no difference in that. And so, and I think, you know, we try to design the song, so it start off with accepting that that's how it is. And we wanted it to be a continuous kind of like, just hold on, because it will, when it's bad, it will turn better again. And I liked, Tom Hanks has a really good kind of like, in one of his interviews, he says, well, when you're on top of the world, just remember, this too shall pass. And when you're at the bottom of the barrel, just remember, this too shall pass. And I think that's a very kind of, it grounds you in a way where you understand that, yeah, enjoy it when it's good. You have to, you really have to. And when it's not, just know that this is just a part of life. It's nothing more than that. And yeah, so I love this song personally. I think it kind of speaks to us all in different parts of life. You know, if you experience loss or you experience hard times, you know, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you haven't yet, just you know, be aware that that is a part of the equation of being alive, that it comes with a mixed, and it's mixed. It's not all good and it's not all bad, you know.
I just started a book called The Comfort Crisis. I teach high schoolers. Okay. And so, you know, it's this, we're kind of in this era of people not being okay with discomfort, you know, and wanting to blame or wanting to be a victim or wanting to crumble, you know, whatever that is. But just this idea of this crisis of comfort right now. And I think, you know, I know me personally, COVID, I mean, horrible, awful thing for the world globally, but I loved being home all the time. You know, it was very safe, very comfortable. My pants had elastic in them, and my drinks all had booze in it, and it was, you know, all comfort, you know, in the safety of our home. And then you kind of get back to normal, and I think that's probably, I'm sure that's part of that that equation. But yeah, the discomfort, everybody's got to go through it.
See, you said stretchy pants and booze, and now I'm thinking of a song.
I love that song.
There it is. There's a song in there.
There's a Norwegian word. Leif, I don't know if I've passed this by you, but it's my new favorite word I learned. It's hukabuskers.
Joggebukse.
Say it again.
Joggebukse.
It means your home pants.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my books.
It's your home pants.
How did you say it again, Angie? You said it. How did you say that?
I said hookah boosters.
Hookah boosters. That's what I heard.
That is like the Swedish, the chef in Muppet Show version.
Guys, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I've had fun. I mean, we've talked for over an hour, and I don't have a time limit on these things. I never set them. So like, cause I do get long winded sometimes, but I've had a real fun conversation talking to you guys about music. We're not quite done. I always ask a couple questions, not music related. Before we get into that, tell everybody where they can find you, your social media, all that stuff.
All right.
So pretty much Crank Up the Silence everywhere you go. Search for Crank Up Silence on Facebook, Instagram, Spotify, YouTube. So it's pretty easy to remember. Crank Up the Silence. You'll find it there. Yeah, if you're close to any of the places we play, we love to have you there. Come and see our show and come and talk to us. We like talking to people. So you don't have to know us in order to come up and say hi. We love talking to our fans and then people who are enjoying our music. So
Just
yeah.
ask about hookah boosters.
Somebody, wherever that word came from, is screaming right now, the way that that's YouTube.
See, my lead guitarist moved to Austin. We're trying to get to Texas maybe next year with the band, bringing the band up there to Texas.
Awesome.
All right. You got to let us know when you're in town.
Absolutely. Texas is a big place. I'll come. I love Texas. I want to go. My wife wants to go back to San Antonio because she was stationed in Texas. Like, she's military. She's been in the Army for 27 years now. She's a reservist, but she was stationed out there, and she loved. There's a river out in San Antonio. I'm not sure what
The
it's
river
called,
walk, yeah.
but she loved. She just remembers going in her with her cooler and her float and just going down the river.
Yeah, floating the river. Yeah.
Probably the Guadalupe.
Yes,
It
the
is.
Guad. Yes, that's.
Guadalupe. That's the Tubin River.
Yes, she told me all about it. She loved it. She wanted to go. I meant to ask earlier, because like I said, I told you guys my name of the band. I love band names and I love the history or the story behind it. So what is the story behind Crank Up the Silence?
Yeah, I was wondering when that one would come up. That's normally the first question we get when we do interviews.
Yeah, I talk a lot sometimes, Les. It comes
No,
out.
it's refreshing to have it at the end. I think, and fill me in here, Angie. But when we started with tinkering with the idea of having the contradiction of the word silence in a band name, because it was kind of like such a different way of looking at, we're making noise, but we contrasted with silence. And as we started kind of building on that, we have a couple of songs that is kind of like, look, one of our songs is called Loud Voices with Nothing to Say. So, which is kind of like, it came out of an idea of looking at some of the reality shows, and it felt like, listen, why are these people having such a big stage to give their opinions, because they're not really saying anything. There is nothing in there that is important to kind of put in front of the world. So, but while we started tinkering with the band name, we started kind of like, okay, maybe the world doesn't need more noise, at least needs less. So cranking up the silence and being more, like you said, put some silence into the songs as well is a very kind of effectful thing to do. And we try to be cognizant of not contributing to the noise in the world in a sense that we're just polluting more, and try to have something sensible that at least some people would find useful to listen to. So that's where we kind of came up with the crank up the silence part. And I think, Angie, you've said it well in some of our bios. I think you have a line in there, if you listen to the world. What was that line again? Do you remember?
Remember. No, I don't remember. I'll have to read my own writing. I know we started as silence. We were silence for maybe almost a year, but we couldn't get that handle for social media. That one was taken. So we did crank up the silence just as a funny, like, we're loud, but it's about silence. And we started going places. There's a South American Caribbean owned pizza place here that we like to go. They have a jam session, and we'd walk in the door and they'd go, "Oh, crank up the silence." People started calling us by the Instagram handle. And so finally we're like, well, that's stuck. That's the thing that people have kind of got their mind wrapped around. So that's where it landed.
And it's unique too, and that's kind of like why we enjoy it doesn't get confused with anyone else. There is, pretty much just one band called Crank Up the Silence.
See, I wish that was true of Yes Ma'am, but I found like three or four. So what I thought I needed to do, we're the only one that's abbreviated because it's M.A.M. stands for middle-aged men. So I was like, okay, I need to have a Yes Ma'am festival and just invite every
Oh,
band called Yes
yes,
Ma'am.
that's a
And
great idea.
so
I
if they're
love it.
If you guys are listening for the Yes Man bands, reach out to me. I'm serious. I'd love to find a way to do that and bring like the first festival, the Yes Man Festival, and have just the Yes Man bands. And then, you know, from then on, bring other bands and other people too. That would be cool.
That'd be cool.
All right.
We can contribute in a way to say, crank up the silence. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, of course.
You know, as an answer. Yeah. We get it into our name as well.
Because we are not silent. I promise you that. There's no silence in what we do. Now, we do a lot of blues and Southern rock stuff, but I'll let you get through something in a minute at the end. But that's we're not silent at all. Now, as you probably can't really see because it's bright, I have what I call the Wheel of Death. It's got like multiple questions. It's just kind of fun questions, 20 question kind of game. So I ask you guys a couple. I don't know what it's going to answer or what it's asked, but we'll see. It's got its own sound effects. If you had a time machine, where would you go?
Ancient Rome.
Okay.
Angie?
The 80s.
Do you want to go back to the 80s?
Yeah.
You know what's so funny about that is everybody's like, oh, the 80s music is so great. It's like, no, if you lived in the 80s, they had some good songs, but there was a lot of crap on the radio.
Yeah, there was. Yeah.
It wasn't sure.
Didn't know it yet, you know.
Right. It wasn't Madonna and Michael Jackson playing all the time. There was some crap in there, I promise you. If you wasn't doing music, what do you think you'd be doing?
Angie, I'll let you go first.
I mean, this one's kind of tricky because we all have day jobs too. So we all have, we're all doing things that we also wanted to do. But
you can't choose that one. You can't choose that.
Okay, can't choose our day jobs. I would love to flip houses.
Down of Joanna Gaines and all them. You're in Texas, right?
Yeah, just buy them up and fix them up, and I love property.
I think I would, if I were to do something absolutely completely different, I think I would love to do something connected to the wilderness.
Okay.
Some kind of either tour or something that brings me out in nature. I don't spend enough time in nature. I miss it.
My day job is I own a pest control company, so I was outside all day today. I don't miss it. I see it all the time.
I was going to say, you can't go outside in Texas right now. It's uninhabitable.
Yeah.
You guys got to be hotter than we are. It's 100 degrees here with the humidity.
We've been been a pretty steady 103, 104 for weeks.
Yes, that's too hot.
And I love it. By the way, you know, I got so many Norwegian winters in my bones. I can take the heat.
Yeah.
So. Takes me a lifetime to defrost.
All right. If you guys, if there was a movie of your life, who would play you in that movie? I already got yours left. You remind me of the guy from Weird Science. What was his name? I have to look that up while you're looking.
That's already settled.
I'm going to look it up while you're answering.
Who would you have, Angie?
I don't know. I mean, this is going to show my 80s again, but I just, maybe more 90s. I've always just wanted to be Meg Ryan. Like, I just feel like Meg Ryan's the alter ego.
You know, it wouldn't really fit well, but what's his name? Joaquin, the guy that plays the Joker.
Which one? The Heath Ledger or
no,
there was Jack Nicholson, there was Joaquin the Phoenix one.
Yeah, Joaquin Phoenix. Yeah.
Yep.
See, this is what's this guy's name? I was looking him up. It is, what was it? Vernon Wells. Tell me that doesn't look like, or is the thing at? There we go.
There we are. There, right? I am.
Doesn't that look like Leif?
It could be. I'm turning into that guy.
All right. I always like to end this the episode on this question. What's the best advice that you have for singer-songwriters, bands that are coming up?
Angie, you want to go first?
I mean, for me personally, I just have to, I studied a lot about creativity. I teach creative writing. I write on the side sometimes, and I've learned the thing about creativity is that you have to get real bored, and you have to allow yourself to be free from distractions for a while, and get into that uncomfortable place, and then just accept whatever is there. Just have fun with whatever comes out, and I think it's real easy to try to model yourself after somebody. I know I did that as a writer for a while. I wanted to write like certain writers, and but that's not what people are looking for. They're not looking for more of the same. So just to kind of not try to fit a mold and not worry about what anybody thinks about what you're doing. Do it for yourself first, and I think better things come out that way.
And for me, I think my advice is you got to enjoy it. You have to fall in love with the process. The price at the end, where people hear your songs and listen to them and enjoy them, is such a small little piece, and it's such a dangerous thing to get too connected to, because you've got to do it because you like doing it. And when it comes to the creative part, I would say write a lot of shit. Because
Check.
from manure is good fertilizer, so don't try to write the perfect song, because that's not how it works. Keep writing songs, and all of a sudden from that manure something sprouts out, and kind of like you just kind of, without you expecting it, all of a sudden one of them jumps out. And from the I think when I write, I think maybe 1 out of 5, 10 are usable songs. The other ones are drafts that never went anywhere. But you can't get too connected to that. You just gotta kind of go with the flow, and all of a sudden they start materializing, and you have to enjoy it. Music is its own reward, and I think that's a very beautiful thing to understand, that this isn't to get the recognition. This is to have the enjoyment of what you're doing. So just keep enjoying it and keep doing it, because then you don't run out of motivation. You don't run out of courage to keep doing it, because you are actually enjoying it. It's a positive feedback loop, where you want to keep going.
And you never run out of maneuver.
True. Fertilizer.
Well, thank you guys for coming on. I really had fun. Right, everybody, this is
Thank you,
Georgia
Matthew.
Songbirds, and that was Crank Up the Silence with Angie and Leif. And guys, thank you again. Thanks for, that's so much
Thank
fun.
you so much.